I'm Gab. He's Jules. It is a glorious, slightly nippy, but sunny morning here in West London. It's a Gab and Jules show. We have a ton of stuff for you. The African Cup of Nations. We have that weird business with the North London Derby. We have Juventus and Grumpy Dybala, Atalanta and Inter, top of Serie A. And the Spanish Super Cup, of course. Yeah. Another trophy for Carletto Ancelotti. But let's start with only one place, right? Manchester City against Chelsea. I'm going to make this easy. Nedim Onua is joining us. Nedim, I kind of feel like I've seen this before, right? Chelsea go to the Etihad. They need a result. They defend, maybe pick something up, some scraps here or there. City fight away. They create some chances, not great chances necessarily. And then the Kevin De Bruyne chap goes and like scores a wonder goal that can't be saved, and it's all over. Is it all over? Well, first of all, is that a fair summation of the game?
I think it is a fair summation of the game, yeah. And interestingly, a year ago, Chelsea beat City there in a game which they felt they had to win because they were going for the top four at the time. So going into this game, there was more pressure on Chelsea, I thought, than there was on City. So for it to go the way it went, you have to rule Chelsea out. I mean, I just looked at the table, and if they were perfect between now and the end of the season, they get 91 points, and that's if they are perfect. And City have got such a... City need to be indifferent to get towards that sort of mark. So you'd think it's over for Chelsea, but obviously football is one of those things you never know and so on. But we've not seen a City collapse which would make you think that that's likely going to happen. So as far as Chelsea are done in terms of the title race, I think they're finished. Yeah.
Right, we're going to get into that in a slightly more granular fashion, maybe even do some scenarios. Jules, I looked at this and... You know, kind of, you realize that how much you miss certain things when they're gone, and I think Chelsea missed their wing backs here, especially the right kind of wing backs.
For sure.
I don't know that it's an alibi for Tuchel. I thought they did what they could, but City are just a substantially better side, and you have serious matchup problems when you have certain people missing.
Yeah, although I probably would have started Jorginho because. I thought the press from City, not being perfect, disturbed them a lot. And we saw the Grealish chance comes from Kovacic losing the ball.
I don't think Jorginho was fully fit.
Yeah, maybe not. But I think then they missed his sort of control and moving the ball and certainly being able to play under pressure because Conte didn't have a good game. And I didn't think that Kovacic has a great game, apart from the ball for Lukaku. It's a game plan where... You're going to have one chance and you need to score it, or maybe two. And to be fair, they had one big chance and they missed it. And then half of one in the first half with Lukaku and Ziyech, they should have done better. But apart from that, it always looked like the winner would come from City or it was going to be 0-0. And what I love about the De Bruyne goal quickly is that he slows down his runs because the ball is almost a bit behind his foot. He slows it down to let the ball almost catches up with him and then hits it with the right foot. I think Kepa... could have done better, by the way, because it's not even right by the post, but it's a wonderful
was
goal
it,
by the
wasn't post. Kepa's weight on the wrong foot?
Yeah, completely. And you could see he almost goes right before going left, and it's too late by far. The ball doesn't even have... It's not even right by the post, the inside of the post.
Okay, I quick sideline on Kepa and goalkeepers in general, right? None of us, I think, played in goal at any level. What others have told me, though... In certain situations, I remember a conversation with Peter Cech where he talked about how he always tried to anticipate. And I'm wondering, maybe I'm putting too much into this, but is that what Kepa did? Because as you said, the logical place for De Bruyne to put it is on the other side, right?
Yeah, completely.
And that's why he shifts his weight.
I think if you've watched Kevin De Bruyne, and I'm sure Nathan will agree, among the years, this is what he does, though. Inside of his right foot, he either... bend in the top corner or by that post, very, very rarely on the other side.
I agree with that. And maybe the thing that threw Kepa off the most is the fact that the ball never really looks set for De Bruyne to be able to make a meaningful contact on it.
Very true.
So for the goalkeeper, I always found this as a defender. There's some strikers, and I can double down on this now since I'm technically an amateur. When I go and play amateur-type football now, you know when somebody's going to shoot because their wind-up is so big, you feel like you've got all the time in the world to be able to deal with it. But the people at the very top, they just find a shot out of nowhere. It seems like the ball's stuck under their feet or they're facing the wrong way, and then before you know it, bang, there's the goal. And I think when that's the case, they're very hard to read. And for even though it wasn't like the greatest, the most well-struck shot in the history of the world, the way it was delivered is probably why Kepa wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up with the uncomfortable question that will no doubt get clipped and thrown back into our faces. Yep. But I'm going to need from both you gentlemen, Nadim, you've already hinted that you think Chelsea are out, just simply the percentage chance that Manchester City become 2021-22 Premier League champions. Nadim.
As it stands, I'm going to say 75%.
You can tell he's a City fan. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not a City fan, and I say 80%. 20% for Liverpool. If they win the game in hand, they come back 8 points behind. If they win at the Etihad early April, that's 5 points.
I'm going to go higher.
They have to be perfect.
I'm going to go substantially higher than that. I think at this stage, I'm prepared to say 90%, frankly.
Ooh, you don't believe in Klopp and Liverpool coming
back? I completely believe in Klopp, but the other guys, Salah and Mane, aren't there. I don't believe Thiago Alcantara can necessarily stay fit and be meaningful between now and the end of the season. I think that midfield is running on fumes. And I also think City are really, really good.
So I was at the game on Saturday, and you know, it was a great game. The weather was really nice, which is fantastic. Anyway, at the end of the game, we're waiting for the players to come and do the flash interviews. And Kevin De Bruyne comes and speaks to the French TV and Belgium TV, and maybe others. And then two of his, he's got three sons, the third one being very little, but the two oldest one, then come out with him on the pitch, and they start playing on the pitch at the Etihad. So I mean, it just ran for like 90 minutes or so. But and what I learned is that I put it on social media because it was really, really cute. And my children in London call this game, when they play with their friends in English, in French you call it, you play chat, you play cat, where you need to touch someone and he's the cat. Yeah,
right.
In London, I believe my sons call it "it," right?
Yes, or tag.
But then he created a whole lot of people saying, no, it's not "it," it's tag in the US, a lot of American audience. Then Nathan, some people in Manchester say, no, it's not "it" or tag, it's tig. I was like, hang on, what? It? Tig? Tag? Like, shah? Come on. What's this?
Okay, honestly, I don't know. I genuinely don't know what to do with you people, right? Because first of all, cat makes no sense.
But you're the cat. You catch someone, he becomes the cat, and then he needs to...
Because cats notoriously aren't sort of lazy animals
mouse.
That sit around, right?
They chase mice, so you could see where it comes from. They need to catch you, okay, like a cat
I have to admit, Jules,
a mouse.
Cat makes more sense than tig. But
or
now...
it, even. What's it? I mean...
Well, because it represents that the itcher, I think is a technical term,
right.
Is the person, is the it. He's the outcast from society comes. He's like a serial killer who comes.
What?
You know, I don't know.
My 9-year-old.
No, you know.
Plays in the game after the serial killer.
But you know what it comes from? It comes from the Great Plague, right?
Oh, my God. It's even worse. Okay, move on. Okay, I don't want to hear
that. No, but I need to understand tig, because as far as I know, tig is not a word in the English language. So here it is, the expert in Mancunian culture and heritage. Nathan, those are your peeps. Explain to me, tig.
I can't explain it, but I can give you some more reference to it, because it's like tig, you're it. So somebody saying it, that's where that's potentially coming from.
But you're it, you're the super spreader.
Well, essentially, yeah, I guess so.
Okay. But what about tig? Come on. Come on. Little Nathan ran around.
What could be tig?
I think
playing
one of
tig?
The beauty, one of the beauties of England is the fact that it's not the, or just the UK, it's not the biggest place in the world, but there's significant differences all across the place. And we all understand what the game is, but how you say it, you know what I mean? Sometimes you need to speak a bit southern, call it tag, get a bit northern, call it tig, get a bit French, call it cat, you know? It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, which is why, like, you know, in the evening you don't have dinner, you have tea, right? For those who don't
know. Up north, yeah. Up north, if you say what you want for dinner, you're likely going to go for lunch with someone. Down south, then dinner's like, yeah.
Dinner, because
it gets darker
evening.
Early
yeah.
in the day.
I know,
I think,
man.
That's it. Can you imagine a little Mark Ogden running around up north saying, like, let's go play tig?
Before tea at 3 o'clock?
Yeah, exactly. All right. With that interlude. But we hope we taught you something about local customs.
Yeah, that's what
know.
I thought. It was nice.
Cat, though. That's just like...
I prefer cat than tig or it, to be fair.
All right. Nathan, let's look at this, because... Actually, let's start with Chelsea first. I mean, you've ruled them out. I think it would take an enormous turnaround. Were you surprised, given the sensitivity of the Lukaku situation, by what felt like Thomas Tuchel calling him out? I mean, I don't even necessarily think in a bad way. I think Lukaku Lukaku was busy. Lukaku got himself in a ton of dangerous situations. He lost the ball.
Not sure there were a ton. There were not a ton. There's the first one that he messes up completely.
No, no, but I'm saying in terms of, I think where he struggled and where you normally expect him to do well is he's an out ball, right? And it felt like there were three, four, five situations where he gets the ball. And normally he's so good at turning, laying it off to somebody and then making a run. But here it seems on many occasions he lost the ball straight away.
Yeah, it was.
Were you surprised, Nathan, that given the sensitivity of what happened before, and Lukaku I don't think is a particularly sensitive guy in that sense. I think he knows.
Yeah.
You know, but that Tuchel called him out that way or called Chelsea's attackers out that way?
I think the sensitivity, to be honest, is coming from the outside, because for those guys in that dressing room and at that club, I think they've probably dealt with that issue itself. And we talk about Lukaku not being sensitive, and I think that is one of his strengths. And if you were to ask him, and if he was to be honest, he'd probably agree with what the manager said. So maybe there's a thing about don't say it in public, but the likelihood is he probably said it in private as well. And I think for the nature of that game, those faults, they could happen during the season, but to happen away at Manchester City plays right into Man City's hands. And you could see the frustration that Tuchel had on the sideline.
Definitely.
Because the vision that he had for that game, it wasn't being manifested by the players out there on the field. So I think that's a very, very open open talking point for him. And, you know, in some ways, we can see into his mind just a little bit. But then again, the bottom line is, can we argue with it? And whether he says it out in public or not, is what he said, is it factually correct or is it wrong?
And maybe he's a bit tougher with him now after what happened in the interview and all of that.
I think you have to know the player's personality, right? Some players, if they're criticized, even in public, or, you know, it's not even a big criticism, right? I mean, he did also have praise in there.
It was just the truth as well.
Exactly. It was the truth. You know, they feel like he's lost confidence in me, he's not defending me, blah, 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 right? I don't think Lukaku has that personality at all. I think Lukaku just kind of looks at it and is very plain. He says, yeah, it's right. You know, they're really good. The minute I received the ball, I got three of these little guys all around me, and they pressed me really hard, and that's what they do really,
true,
really
but
well.
Even the simplest touch or layoff or anything like this. I mean, Laporte and Stones won every single duel in the air against Lukaku. He could not hold the ball up. And then there's the big chance at 0-0. And I don't know, you on television, I don't know how the camera was on, but for us in the stadium, everybody knew exactly, including Ederson, what Lukaku would do, how he would open his foot. And we could have all told you exactly where the ball was going to go. And that's why he missed. There was no surprises from him. He didn't give him the eye, didn't try to chip him, nothing. He would just open his foot like we all knew he would. And it was far too easy, I think, to save for Ederson.
Yeah, I think he's going to go back and miss that. I want to get a technical view before we get into our scenarios from somebody who has been, who was top flight wide defender.
And goal scorer. He scored some bangers.
Yes, Nathan was showing us his goal of the season award. But anyway, did you rub it for good luck before this game against Chelsea? Just wondering, Nathan.
Did I what, sorry?
Nathan scored a goal of the season for Sunderland. Right, yeah. Some years ago. At Stamford Bridge against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Top in the 3-0 win. Back when, yes, I know, younger viewers may not realize this, but Sunderland used to be a top flight club who could go away to Stamford Bridge and beat them 3-0. And Nathan scored a goal of the season.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube. Yeah, it really happened.
Yeah.
That is Nathan out there.
True.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering, did you rub it for good luck given that City were playing Chelsea before the game? Every little helps, you know.
No, thankfully I'm not really superstitious. I completely forgot about that. It just happens to just be right into my computer. I completely forgot. But yeah, the game itself, it was such I lost track of how much pressure Chelsea would have been under to get a result if they wanted to win the title until the game began, because it was the FA Cup the week before. So I hadn't really been, it wasn't at the forefront of my mind. Then you realised and you thought, wow, this is huge. This is huge because, you know, if it goes down to, say, 7 points, then they're not favourites to catch them, but there's hope there. But when you go to 13, it was such a weird moment in the Premier League season after that game, because as soon as it was finished, City were top and the team in second were 13 points behind, who was saying that they're part of a title race. Mm-hmm. And I know Liverpool won now, so they've gone above them and so on. But it was just a really, really weird moment. And then even going into the game yesterday, if West Ham would have won, they'd have been 3 points behind Chelsea, who were in theory a part of a title race. It was a big occasion, and unfortunately for them and a couple of other chasers, it was the exact opposite result that they wanted.
The turning around between early December, where Chelsea were top, and now, and everything that happened during this festive period, the last 6 weeks is just incredible, really.
There's reasons for that.
12 win run is incredible.
I want to get into that in a second, though, but we had to take advantage of Nathan being here because I have a technical defending question.
Okay, sorry.
All right. We know that Alonso, because he's a big boy and probably more of a wing back, out in open space, you know, Mohamed Salah created problems for him. Raheem Sterling took him on several times and really struggled with it. Now, Nathan, again, I don't want to be unkind. You probably didn't hit free kicks the way Alonso did, but you were known in part for your quickness out wide. I'm just wondering, when you're coming up against Sterling, right? So obviously, we're all taught this. Alonso's there against Sterling in open space. Help isn't coming. I'm assuming you want to jockey him. You want to leave enough space for him. And the difficult thing with Sterling is he can beat you with sheer quickness, and he can also put a move on you. And if you stay too far off, he can also cross the ball, right? So it's kind of like a triple threat situation. What does a defender need to do in that situation? You know, and please don't say, just be quick like me because I can stay with Sterling.
Some of the best people I've seen go up against Sterling, interestingly, was last season. I think it was Reece James was up against him in the Champions League final. And what they did well, Chelsea, that day was the moment Sterling had the ball, there was somebody that was on him because they were funneling the ball to that side. So defending one-on-one, you know, it can be helped by other people because they can try and allow you enough time to be able to get over there. Because for players like Sterling, if there's a gap between you and them from the get-go and they've got the ball at their feet, you're done. Basically, you're hoping they make a mistake instead of you being able to control what they do. But if you can be there and be contesting it from the get-go, you can apply more pressure and affect their decision-making. But from when Sterling gets the ball and he starts just running at you full speed, you can try and read it and hope that, you know, maybe he does this or maybe he does that. But given the fact that he's got players around him who you can play 1-2s with and things like this, like gone are the days where, you know, you'd have a left winger who just stay there with like chalk on their boots and
Steve Coppell.
Well, yeah, all that stuff, where literally they're just going to come at you with a step over or something and everything's just in this 1v1. Like, there's more balance around it. So I think for Chelsea and for Alonso, because he's not as quick as Sterling, he has to be able to contact him the moment Sterling gets the ball.
Okay, but if he does that, I mean, if I'm Sterling and Alonso comes tight to me, then I just knock the ball into space and I run away from him, right?
That's assuming he's got enough time to be able to just get the ball and just knock it into space. Because I think that's the thing. In that Champions League final, Chelsea funneled the ball out wide exceptionally well. And with Mahrez and with Sterling, they were like 2v1s and all sorts. But when you leave people 1v1 against attackers like that, who are more dynamic than the fullback and everybody knows it, well, what else are you going to do? We'll throw someone else over to make a 2v1. But the way City are playing at the minute, that plays into their strengths even more because someone else is now free. So I think for Alonso, it was a poor matchup for him, and he could have done better. But then the other side of it is that's key, is don't play into their strengths. You know, don't allow them to be able to just turn, open up, kick and run. Don't allow them to be trying to, like, hope get you on a yellow card early. Like, don't dive in. I've always found with attackers that they'd rather play against somebody that dives in than somebody that stays on their feet, because if somebody stays on their feet, it always forces them to do something good as opposed to just get lucky and then all of a sudden, you know, the other guy's on the back foot again.
Okay, so Alonso, if you're watching this, Coach Nathan wants you to instantly get across and close the gap with Sterling, but do it without diving in and stay on your feet and wait for help to arrive, right?
Simple.
Really easy.
Simple.
Jules, Nathan's ruled Chelsea out. Mm. Okay, what needs to go right? What are the fixes that Tuchel needs to make for Chelsea to win the title? I mean, as improbable as it sounds, that things have to go wrong elsewhere, right? But Just tell me, what are the things that, if you're Tuchel, what are three things that you say, we need to be better in this situation? We need to fix this.
That's a good question. I think defensively, you think about that back five, they had potentially only, Thiago Silva is really the only one that would start, maybe Azpilicueta, so two or five, because otherwise, and Rudiger and Thiago Silva, because then Chilwell, Reece James, and potentially Christensen will be the other for the back five, and Mendy in goal. So already you were with a lot of your starters in the back wrong. I think defensively, they used to be more ruthless than they've been this season.
Chalobah also out, which I think we wouldn't have said this in the summer, but I think that's another option. I think.
Although I think Malansar did okay, and I'm obviously completely biased. Although at times, Tuchel wanted him to play higher up. Thiago Silva was the one saying, like, hey, let's stay a bit deep. I think Thiago played a little bit too deep in this game, to be fair.
But going forward, do you think of changing formation? Do you just focus on the Champions League?
I was amazed by the poor quality of Hakim Ziyech in this game. I mean, especially that ball in the first half for Lukaku that went literally in the corner flag. And by Pulisic. There's something about Pulisic. I think he's a very, very talented player. There's just something not happening for him. He keeps making the wrong decision on the ball. He's either overthinking it all the time, or he feels there's too much pressure when he's on the ball to do something special, but there's not enough end product for what he brings. I don't know why Mount only played the last 10 minutes. He must have been injured, I would believe, not fit.
I'm tired. I don't know.
Tired. They have, obviously, data medical-wise that we don't have. That's the only way I could see, but there's... I don't think they're too far from a really good run. It's just that compared to City, they lost twice against them, home and away, because City is just a better team than them every time they've been facing them this season.
See, I go back to this though, right? And because for me the biggest thing is actually chemistry, right? So you came in, you had an impact by just tightening up the back and not conceding last season, right? But you want to be able to create chances to control games. And you have a whole bunch of outstanding players. Now, at City, we see them with a whole bunch of outstanding players, and they come in, they go out, nothing changes. Yeah. I think in part because those players, most of them, have been there a very long time, and Pep Guardiola's been there a very long time. That's not the case with Tuchel.
True.
So you can say, oh, Jorginho, Conte, Kovacic, three outstanding midfielders, right? Again, some people won't like that because they don't like Jorginho or whatever, but the point is they're also all very different. So whenever I change a combination, things change. You pointed out how they missed Jorginho in this game. Kovacic was on a great run. I can understand him not dropping Kovacic, right? Yeah, Conte brings different things to the table. Up front, I think it's even more obvious, right? You want to integrate Lukaku. Okay, fine. The guy gets injured, he gets COVID, he goes out for 2 months, he's not there. It's a whole revolving cast characters.
No, definitely.
And it just becomes very, very different, whether it's Werner or Havertz or Pulisic or Ziyech or Mount.
But you saw a team.
Is this a thing? Is this a thing where you're not going to have the patterns of play because these guys are all different?
But also you've had a team like City who, again, I think people in this country underestimate how amazing this team is, really. But they've been together more or less. Okay, Grealish has arrived in the summer, but more or less for 5 years with the same coach, with the same methodology all the time. And even when you block the half spaces, which they're very good at using, they still find another way of beating you anyway. Even with that only 55% of possession, which is way below the usual 67 or 68 they have in the Premier League, they still beat you anyway. And for Chelsea, the coach has been there a year. There have been a lot of changes. There's a lot of players missing, which is not the case, by the way, at City. And they're still too good for you.
Nadim, we talked about Chelsea. As far as Liverpool are concerned, Jules painted the scenario. I want to believe it can happen. You know, they win the game in hand, they're 8 points back, and then they win the head-to-head, and they're just 5 points back. It's a big ask for City, but it's not unthinkable. But I kind of feel that Liverpool, while getting results, haven't, with some exceptions, they haven't been on the level that they can be at when everybody's fit, when they have all their options. I mean, leaving aside Salah and Mane, who obviously are away right now, but still, those guys aren't going to be back for a while. What can Klopp do? Because I don't think his bench is particularly deep. He's got to play the same guys. We saw, you know, the other week when Milner played, you know, what a disaster that was.
Yeah.
And how different. I'm not picking on him, obviously, but he is 36, and you can't play at 36 the way you played at 25.
Definitely not.
I mean, like, a lot has to go right for Liverpool, right, for them to challenge.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. But I think the difference between Liverpool and, say, Chelsea in this moment, apart from, say, the three-point buffer they have, is Liverpool have been involved in a title race with Man City for the last 3 years or so. So they have a feeling of having won the Premier League, having gone head-to-head with someone, having had this sort of, like, ebb and flow, nip and tuck. Because I think it was... This is obviously going against them, but I think it might have been three seasons ago where City played Liverpool just at the turn of the year in a big game where if Liverpool won, it would be 10 points.
Yeah, they were 7 points behind, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And City won, it went down to 4 or whatever. So they've had this sort of nip and tuck with City. But to be honest, the thing that's made the difference here, I think, and this is probably what's gone wrong with Chelsea, these big games, like, they matter. But City are top because they've won 12 games against absolutely anybody in the league. I think when you look at Liverpool, you look at Chelsea, they've drawn games and lost games and dropped points at a time where City were perfect because they were beating the opposition that they should have been beating. So for Liverpool, they can mix up their team and so on, but they need to just find that way to be clinical. Like, looking at them and the fact they've had 6 draws, like, that's why they're not top of the league. City have had to, you know, they've lost the same amount of games as Man City.
Those are 12 points right there.
Yeah,
those 6 draws.
Yeah, and when I spoke to De Bruyne after the game, which is a cliche, but he said, you know, those big games, you just have to win them. It's 6 points for you against Chelsea in the 2 games that you've won. And I know it's a bit stupid and silly, and yeah, of course, but you need to win every game. I know, but those head-to-heads, in a way, are so decisive because you would expect Chelsea to beat everybody else, and then it's only down to the games between Chelsea and City and Liverpool and those games. And I can see his point. I think there's obviously more than that, but Liverpool need to be they need to win the game in hand, and then if they're still 8 points only 8 points behind City when that game arrives it's the first weekend of April, I think, at the Etihad, this is the best they can do, is that not dropping, not losing any more points on City between now and the first weekend of April. If they do that, and that's 8 points there, close to 5, then between April and mid-May, those next 6 weeks will be huge. And then I think anything can happen. But
yeah, you would still be asking City to lose 2 more games after that, which is, you know,
yeah,
with Liverpool perfect, yeah, which I think is an ask. So what scenarios would this happen in? Because this is one of the things that strikes me about City, right? We've talked endlessly about how it really is a collective. You know, we talked about how great De Bruyne is and he's a fantastic value added, but the also point is, you know, not that long ago he was out for like 6 months and nobody seemed to notice, right? Ruben Dias, many had him in his player of the season last year. And look, here come Chelsea in this big game. What do I do? Bench. I drop Ruben Dias, you know, like,
as you do, you know,
as you do, right? Who is the most important, the most difficult player to replace? I would probably maybe lean towards Rodri because I'm not a Fernandinho
or
fan.
Cancelo. That pass from Cancelo, by the way, deserves a lot of love because right. He breaks the lines, and then there's a lot of work for De Bruyne to do. But if you keep playing those passes all the time, at some point it will bring you a goal or a chance or a big chance. And the fact that he plays it one touch without even looking, knowing exactly where De Bruyne is, the tempo is perfect, the timing is perfect. This is an amazing pass.
Okay, yeah, I think Cancelo. I think that's a good shout. I would assume Ederson as well would figure there. I think there's a gap right now between him and Zach Steffen. Are those the 3 guys? I mean, do you agree with that assessment, Nathan?
Not necessarily. I think Cancelo has been exceptional. But I think I can still see City winning a game if they play Zinchenko and Walker at fullback positions. That's I can fine. Still see that.
He just gives Cancelo, them an extra dimension, right? He doesn't create a gap when
exactly.
he's not there.
But it's an absolute pleasure to have him in your team. But for me, it's not an essential because they have so many other people. I think Ederson, obviously, I think Zach Steffen's a good goalkeeper, but Ederson's special. And then as for the Rodri situation, I think Rodri's been one of City's best players this whole season. Mm. And interestingly, it's come at a time where when Fernandinho plays, he doesn't look the same as he did at the end of last season when he was like very, very good. So the drop-off as it stands, because obviously Fernandinho could find form, it feels far greater when Rodri's not playing as opposed to, say, any of those other players as such. And also to mention the City thing, it's their style of play is so significant and more important than individuals. That is why you can have Dias and Gundogan on the bench, because let me be honest with you, those are 2 of City's captains. Like, they literally, like, Gundogan is captain 1, Dias is captain 2, but they can both be on the bench for what was arguably the biggest game of the season so far. So, as I say, it just shows so much like strength that comes through that collective.
What if boys, they go find the Champions League could that, I mean, I know he hasn't disturbed them really before, so I don't see why he would disturb them. And the focus switches to the Champions League, and the players are more thinking about Champions League and Pep, which means maybe dropping a few points there and there, a draw there, maybe a defeat there in the Premier League, or that's it doesn't really work like this.
I think it can happen, but as Nadim just said, it's so much about the group, about the collective, that, you know, if you go and you lose a Champions League first leg and you're humiliated badly by somebody good, let's say, right? I'm imagining the players who don't play in that game for City coming in and being like, we weren't a part of that. We're going to fix this now, yeah. Right? It's hard to see how this would have a knock-on effect. I mean, I think, for me, it would take a prolonged period of unavailability for Rodri. And I know it's not just Fernandinho who can come in. Gundogan can come in and play that role. But Gundogan, I think, plays that role very differently from Rodri.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you can ask him to he's not going to have that presence, and I think that matters. But we're talking about extreme scenarios, yeah. And I hate anointing somebody in January, but I think it's fair to say it looks like the title of the season is to lose. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough City, enough Chelsea. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid win the Spanish Super Cup as Luka Modric scores another wonder goal.
Yeah.
Jules, this time, Real Madrid can't be accused of playing on the counter with the possession they had.
Yeah, you're right. This is something, a game that they control more. They control more the possession than at times in the past, especially in big games. Although the Modric goal comes from a very quick attacking transition. They're 4-9 in the box and still find a way.
Transition, good. Counter-attack, bad, right?
Don't listen to him. They're all good or all bad, depending on how you want your team to play, but they were just too good for Athletic Bilbao, who had a lot of courage and, you know, wanted to play, and Marcelino is doing a good job there. And obviously, there's the Williams brothers too, which is an amazing story. But Real Madrid is just too good. And Karim Benzema, Karim the Dream, 28th title in his career, the most successful French player ever.
Yeah. Penalty kick. I mean,
it doesn't matter. They all count.
What is it? He win 3 Ballon d'Or like Michel Platini did, and then we have a debate about that. Yeah,
different time. Big Sevilla derby between Betis and Sevilla in the Copa del Rey on Saturday. But Gab, this was cut short at 1-1 after Joan Jordan was hit by a pole, a UPVC, like you know, for the flags and stuff like that. It looks like thrown from the stands.
Yeah, so the game itself was the final sort of 40-odd minutes were played the next day behind closed doors, and Sergio Canales scored to send Betis through, which may be good news for Sevilla and Lopetegui with a view towards the chase of Real Madrid domestically. And obviously the guy who threw this, well, obviously should never ever set foot in a stadium ever again. But there was a lot of acrimony about this. A lot of Betis players accusing Jordan of making a meal of it. Manuel Pellegrini, who I would think should know better, after the game coming out and saying he exaggerated it. You had Camarasa saying, like, oh, Lopetegui was telling the players to stay down.
No, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's ugly stuff. It's not necessary. I don't want to get into, you know, ooh, how hurt was he really? Could he? It shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I'm old school on this one. If you get hit by something thrown from the stands, then I think that team should forfeit the game. That's how it used to be.
It's like Payet and the Marseille Lyon.
Yeah, we've moved on from there, and that's fair enough. But don't throw accusations. Just focus on getting the guy who did it. Atalanta and Inter play to a scoreless draw in Bergamo. Jules, this was an intense game against an understrength Atalanta. But is there an Edin Dzeko issue at Inter, given the chances?
I don't want to believe that. I don't want to.
One goal in 12 games.
I know, but you can miss chances. Musso made some really good saves. Andanovic made some amazing saves.
Superb save from Andanovic.
Superb save. I thought it was a really good game. You know, when you see 0-0, you can like, okay. But no, it was actually a very good 0-0. That sometimes happens. I don't want to believe in a Dzeko curse, or it's just you know, it will come back.
Yeah, no, I think it'll come back.
It creates the chances, to be fair.
Atalanta, I think, again, showing that even when they had like 7 players out, big players.
But imagine if they had everybody fit the whole season, where they would be now, because they've had all the defenders out pretty much, the wing backs out for a long time.
Yeah.
I know.
No Ilicic, no Malinovsky, no Mele, Coop Miners in the front three. I mean, come on.
And sticking with that game, Napoli's social media reacted in a rather unusual way, Gab, to the draw, which was a good thing for them, of course.
Well, yeah, it was a good thing for Napoli. Napoli's official social media account on Twitter came out and they said something like, oh, congratulations to Atalanta and Inter having played such an honest and intense and exciting game. I don't know if they're trolling. We've become so cynical, right?
Yeah.
And we're not used to official social media accounts commenting on other games.
True.
That you don't know, what are you getting at? If they're trying to troll, nobody got it. And in fact, they're left wondering. If you were just being honest, hey, maybe this is the hallmark of a newer, gentler, kinder era where people say nice things about each other.
Yeah, maybe.
Takes them a while to get going, but Liverpool beat Brentford 3-0 to go back into second place. Jules, this is the first game since 2017 in which neither Mo Salah nor Sadio Mane started for Jurgen Klopp's side.
Yeah.
And we kind of noticed, yeah?
Yeah, you noticed it. And Brentford, okay, there's a heavy defeat that doesn't really reflect, I think, the way the whole game went, because they also had a couple of really good chances. Yeah.
They had about 3% of the possession.
But, you know, they defended well and they played. Especially on the Minamino goal, you can't try to play from the back, and Norgren never even checks his shoulders and see if there's anyone like Firmino behind him. And Firmino was so intelligent, almost hiding and then coming over him, in front of him, and taking the ball off him. But they had to win. They won. It's a clean sheet. You almost tick the games that you're not going to play without Mane and Salah and say, hope for the next one we do the same, and then they will eventually come back and this team will be so strong again.
I think it's also very obvious that for Firmino to play in a front three with Jota, and I mean, he's maybe not where he wants to be, but equally, Oxlade-Chamberlain, who had a good game,
scored a nice
goal. He just plays the game so differently from the other ones.
Of course. We were supposed to be talking about the North London Derby as well today, Gab, but we're not, because Arsenal asked for a postponement that was granted and Spurs aren't happy at all.
No, they sent out a spiky, prickly official statement and there's a lot of back and forth. Look, I go back to this clarity, transparency, right? And there's two ways you can do this. You either have very clear rules and say, these are the rules and there's no exceptions to it, or you do it on a common sense case-by-case basis, which is how the Premier League does it. It's a bit like common law versus Roman law, Napoleonic law. However, if you're going to do it that way, and there are guidelines, but they're just that, they're guidelines, they're not hard and fast rules. They evaluate everything on a case-by-case basis. Then you have to issue a statement and explain. Tell me, which Arsenal players weren't there? Which Arsenal players are self-isolating?
Yep.
Don't hide behind these stupid privacy laws. This is just dumb, right? Because otherwise, all you're doing is fueling more and more suspicion. The fact that they consider people under illness and you get a doctor's note. What, a doctor employed by the club? Oh, look, you know, Mohamed Alman, not Nani because he wasn't there, but, you know, Lokonga has the sniffles, right? Oh, maybe, you know, all this stuff is so subjective.
No. But at least come out and explain either. You know, this is not their rule. This is the rule.
No, I'm not saying that, but actually, this is something the Premier League should do better. They're so good at so many things. On this point, I think they're creating a problem for themselves. Paris Saint-Germain beat Brest 2-0 as my boy Gigi Donnarumma makes a couple big saves. Jules, why is Kylian grumpy again?
He was grumpy. He scored a goal. And again, I think it was a lot of the Mbappe show. Not much else collectively, but he was grumpy because...
Where is Messi playing?
So he hasn't really fully recovered from COVID, the winter break, etc. He would be there in the next game, I suspect. But Mbappe got in a big altercation with one of the Brest players who insulted his family and his mum, and then complained to the referee, and especially the fourth referee who heard it all, or certainly he feels like, of not doing anything, saying, like, you don't know how to referee here anyway, it's always the same. And PSG feeling, especially after the tackle on Wijnaldum, who injured Wijnaldum, by the way, who maybe his best performance, and then got a bad tackle, would be out now between 3 and 4 weeks. PSG feeling that the players are not protected enough by the referees, and Kylian feeling the same as well.
But suggestions too that they're making one last ditch effort, 2 year extension to try.
It's not last ditch effort because the discussions and the talk between the Mbappe family and the club has been going on. It never broke really. So they're just talking again, and it seems that the Mbappe clan is a bit more open, maybe to a short extension. I'm very wary about that, but it's only what they believe at the club.
Don't count your chickens. Yeah.
Bayern win 4-0 away to Köln as Robert Lewandowski scores the 300th goal of his career. Gab is 65 goals away from the Gerd Müller record that many thought would never be broken.
That's right. Gerd Müller, 365 Bundesliga. So it's one of those numbers that you figure, okay, like this is never, you know, it's like Cy Young's 511
exactly,
wins,
yeah.
Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, why not? He's 33 years old. 65 goals is a lot, but you figure he'll probably get another 15 or 20 this season. And then, you know, can he hang out and try to beat the record? You know what struck me about this game, though? Bayern had five legit starters out, right? They, they turned things around. They played Pavard at center back, Sabitzer at left back. They had Corentin Tolisso scored a great goal. And Mark Rocha.
Yeah,
Mark Rocha in midfield. And they don't miss a beat. Also, because Cologne, frankly, are horrendous.
Yeah, I thought on Alphonso Davies, by the way, and we hope he recovers from
that. Yeah, myocarditis. No Cristiano Ronaldo, and Manchester United go two goals up against Aston Villa, but are pegged back to 2-2 after Philippe Coutinho comes on for his Villa debut. Yes, that's why they call him the Wizard. Ralf Rangnick says it felt like a defeat, Jules.
Yeah, certainly it looked like it did. Maybe the best performance under him, so in the first hour.
You can't say that the best performance was without Cristiano on the pitch, otherwise the Cristiano guys are going
to
come
No, but that doesn't mean that Cristiano is not good for this team or bad or whatever. It's just that they happen to play well, and the way they pressed, even if they were lucky on the first goal by Bruno Fernandes. But I thought it was a decent performance. And then they all wasted it in the space of, 10 minutes. And they probably could have even lost the game.
Yeah, I think they did a lot. And defensively, not good.
No, not good at all. Speaking of Rangnick, he also said that Anthony Martial wasn't included in the squad because he was awaiting a move and didn't want to travel with the team. Martial then took to social media, Gab, to say that wasn't true.
Well, you tell me.
It's strange. He said he always wants to go for United.
I don't understand how one of these two is obviously
lying. Yeah.
Why even bring it up if you're Rangnick? Just say, Martial wasn't picked. If Rangnick had simply said Martial wasn't picked because he's awaiting a possible move somewhere, then you don't create this. Once you say, Martial didn't want to travel.
I know.
Why? Even if it's true, why? Why say it?
Exactly.
Erling Haaland scored twice back on Friday in Borussia Dortmund's 5-1 victory over Freiburg. But Jules, he's not particularly happy with his employers. He feels a little bit pressured.
Yeah, he said in his post-match interview with Jana Jofjortov, our colleague and friend, he said that the club are now putting me under pressure. I just want to play, but they put me under pressure to give them my decision if I stay or if I leave in the summer. And he looked really unhappy about it. And I was like, okay, I don't know. In a way, they want to know, which is respectable. They want to know because if you go, then they need to replace you. You know, whether you go and get, whatever shortlist target that they have. And if you want to stay, then the sooner they know, the better. They're happy.
Yes, it's fine, but it's, you know what?
Stop talking about it.
Okay,
but I can see his point of view as well of being like, hey, let me play football.
He's got a contract.
Exactly.
He has a release clause that is in his, you know, it's there. First of all, it's not like he becomes a free agent, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They, as far as I know they've been talking to him. They have a verbal offer, but they didn't put an offer on the table for him to extend or whatever. He's taking time, which he's entitled to do. Just lay off him. You need Haaland between now and the end of the season.
And you don't need him to be worried because, you want him to be at his best. Juventus beat Udinese 2-0 and Paulo Dybala scores one and sets up another. He also made it very clear, Gab, that he's not happy with someone at the club. A celebration. You could see the...
Maybe multiple people. He scores a goal and then he goes and he gives the ice. Up in the stands after he says, I was just looking for a friend. And, implication maybe he doesn't have many. What he's unhappy about, we've touched upon this, he feels his agents have told people that, we had a deal in place for 8 million euros a season plus another 2 million in easy to reach bonuses, which, by the way, works out at around 300 grand a week. But then the club later come out, he's got to earn his contract. And we're going to go and discuss contracts in February. And this is supposedly what listen, I don't know what the truth is. I do know that if you're Juve and you're going to pay him £300,000 a week, 10 million euros a year net, then that is That is simply wrong. It's a waste of money. Call his bluff. Is there anybody in Europe who's going to give him that kind of money and who also wants him? Wait.
Yep.
That money
is
better spent. And, you know, great performance. That was Udinese with like nine guys out. Okay.
Yeah,
so pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
West Ham contrived to lose at home to an injury ravaged Leeds United 3-2 as Jack Harrison scores a hat trick. Rafinha dispenses magic. Jules, this was big in the battle for top four.
It was big, especially with United dropping points as well. Obviously, no game between Spurs and Arsenal. It would have been really good for West Ham to win. It was enough there. Defensively, they were terrible. They could have conceded more, and they were not efficient enough. Offensively, Jared Bowen could have had another one or two easily, especially right at the end to snatch a draw. I think Leeds deserved to win that game, but yeah, it's a big chance missed by West Ham.
Happy days for Bielsa, a great game. Very entertaining.
Definitely. Very nice game. Everton, meanwhile, have sacked Rafa Benitez after the defeat against Norwich. Gab, that's the right decision, right?
I think so. There's obviously things that have broken down badly. But and look, I know Liverpool fans are laughing. Ha ha, agent Rafa, blah, blah, blah. Look, you know, you can't simply go and say, oh, but there's all these bad players here. It takes time. DCL injured. When you're a manager there, you're there to provide value added. If you're one of the big name managers who's paid a ton of money, he clearly hasn't been able to do that. There's a lot of turmoil. Obviously, Marcel Brand's also leaving.
But he got rid of loads of people, head of medical, head of recruitment, head of scouting, head of everything. And then you sack him after 6 months. Don't give him all that freedom. And, you know, and controlled in a way.
I can only conclude that on the football side, I know there's some smart people at the club who are working on the new stadium and so on, but on the football side, you know, since Moshiri took over, I think it's six managers, two directors of football.
Yeah.
Everton fans deserve a little bit better than this.
Mm. And stability, for sure.
And obviously this also makes Carlo look good because he did all right last season when he finished 10th. Bayer Leverkusen went away to Borussia Mönchengladbach 2-1. There you go. I had to do it. I had to do it, man. I had to do the accent, you know. And Patrick Schick scores again and misses a penalty, too. Jules, it's a formula, right?
Yeah.
They're third. They're 14 points behind Bayern. Yeah. Is the gap between Bayern and Leverkusen roughly equivalent to the gap between Lewandowski and Schick?
Oh, you're so mean. You're so mean to Schick. You're always mean to him. He's scored like 15 goals in 9 games. I know he missed. I missed two, actually. Sommer saved 2 pens. It was a great game. Really entertaining stuff. Maybe you're right. Maybe the difference is between the two clubs is the difference between Schick and Lewandowski.
You know, I kind of feel this season, right, that we look at... Remember, when we were growing up, it was a big deal. Oh, look, that guy scored more goals than games he's played in. Whoa! I kind of feel like, you know, we focus on Leva and Haaland and Vlad... I feel like we don't show any love for Schick anymore.
Well, certainly not you and your questions, like, no, you know, dissing him big time. Sergio Oliveira makes his debut and scores the winner from the spot to give Roma a 1-0 win over Cagliari. Gabriel José Mourinho said he would be a difference maker, and he's been already.
Yeah, I mean, he came in.
They could not be Cagliari before his pen, to be fair.
Cagliari aren't good, but they still came very close. I mean, Gian Pedro hit the woodwork. They were in trouble at the end. Mourinho himself coming out afterwards saying, well, that game could have been a draw. I mean, look, there's no sense. Right? When you expect him to gloat, he's grumpy and humble.
Yeah.
When you expect him to be grumpy and humble, he gloats. So I don't, I give up on him. In that game, his personality against a bad team, they did what they were supposed to do. They got the 3 points. But I think Mourinho's right when he says, we can do a lot more and we can play a lot better.
Definitely.
Ivory Coast are held 2-2 by Sierra Leone despite goals from Sebastian Haller and Nicolas Pepe. And despite the two big mistakes, Frank Kessie missing a penalty.
Yeah.
And that madness that we saw at the end. Is it Sangare?
Sangare, the goalkeeper. Number 2 choice goalkeeper for Ivory Coast who literally fumbled the ball, to use an American football term. Not that we want to talk about American football because
he's
the Eagles
to keep
are not
the
flying
ball.
Anymore.
Stop it.
But
he's trying to keep the ball in play for no apparent
and
reason,
then,
right?
As he drops on the floor with the ball in his hand, he fumbles it. The ball's hit the floor, then rolls over. Stephen Corker, the former England international, now plays from Sierra Leone, just crosses the ball and Camara scores 2-2 in the dying minutes of the game. Just incredible stuff. I mean, they still have 4 points and they will qualify, although they play Algeria in the next game in this group stage, but they will still go through. But it's just an incredible end of a game.
I've never seen this before with Cote d'Ivoire. They're so often, they're less than the sum of their parts.
It's a young team as well. And Algeria's on the other hand, Gab, their unbeaten run came to an end in the most dramatic way against Equatorial Guinea, 114 in the FIFA ranking. They have just 1 point in two games, Gab, after the draw against Sierra Leone in the first one, and now they face Ivory Coast, as we've been saying next. They are in big danger there.
Yeah, I thought they played a lot better. I thought this was kind of against the run of play, the goal. But still, you know, you can see in those tournaments a little bit when things aren't going right, you can kind of see the fear, the nervousness. Like, I'm not going to lie, I'm glad that there's only one team in the world that has gone 36 games unbeaten in international football. I'm glad it's not Algeria. It's still Italy. Big game in Ligue 1. Lille take the lead through Botman. Then they go down to 10 men after half an hour, and then they have to settle for a draw against Marseille. And Renato Sanchez making a naughty gesture to the fans.
He was
really... These games have everything.
I know, everything. Only 5,000 of them. As you know, there's restrictions for the crowd in
front. So it's easier to see exactly who we gave the finger to, right?
5,000 in a 60,000-seater stadium. You can almost name them all. Hey, Paul, François, Frédéric. Renato, who was really good in the game, but the middle finger came up for the abuse he got when he got subbed off. And in the end, I think it's a good draw for Lille. 1-1, Marseille had tons of chances. They should have won the game. Cengiz Under with a lovely goal as well to get the point. He's been amazing for them recently.
I love this. This is like Marvel superheroes between between Botman and Cengiz Under. You know, I love this.
Ciro Immobile scores twice as Lazio win 3-0 against Salernitana in what we used to call the Lolito Derby, of course.
Or Lotito.
Lotito Derby. Gab, 17 goals in 18 Serie A appearances this season for Immobile. Some things don't change, do they?
So, Lolito brings to Lotito. Mind the classic Nabokov novel. I'm trying to imagine Claudio Lotito as a little boy, known as Lolito, and this sort of older Mrs. Robinson type woman. Okay, I'll stop there before we get in trouble. He scored two goals early on, sends them on their way. I'm sorry, I don't know why he doesn't do it as well as other people say internationally. He does it in City. He scores a ton of goals. This is impressive stuff. Egypt bounced back from their defeat in the opener to beat Guinea-Bissau 1-0 thanks to Mohamed Salah's goal. Jules, normal service resuming?
Yeah, they were good. They were nothing exceptional, though. And really, I don't think they created that many chances. But it's a good goal by Salah, his first one in the competition.
It was good, but did you think, like, it looked like almost like his finish was in slow motion. Like,
The keeper could have maybe done better. It's just, we go back to what we said before, though. He has to be him. I just don't. If it's not him, and he didn't have a great game, I thought through the game. And by the way, Guinea-Bissau scored an amazing goal at the end. That was ruled out by VAR. Really, I thought that was really harsh. So that could easily have been 1-1. But Salah is really their hope to go far in this tournament. And Nigeria mid one Gab beat Sudan 3-1 and make this look really easy.
Three goals.
That looks so good.
Three goals in the first half. Yeah, or I guess one started with Simon. They're flying. You know, we think so super sharp. Egos. We always think controversy, division. I hope there's none of that. I want to see them play. This may not be as talented as Nigerian teams of the past, but you know, sometimes it doesn't matter in a tournament if the vibe is right. They don't look like a team that's going to self-destruct like we've seen in the past. Newcastle have been linked with a move for
no chance.
Taylor Navas.
Leave him alone.
Why?
Nah, listen, I can see why they go for it. Look, they've got two amazing goalkeepers. One has to be unhappy, which is the one
we like. Newcastle, you mean? Like, you think their goalkeepers are that good?
No. For Navas to go and get him.
What about Sergio Rico? He's amazing too in his own way.
Get Rico instead of... I mean, I think we're sending him to Mallorca. PSG said no, by the way, to the Newcastle Inquiry. They need a keeper. Go and get Henderson. Why are you like trying to get my player?
Can I say something? I don't want to be suspicious, but I'm purely speculating here. I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that this wasn't Eddie Howe saying, ooh, I need to upgrade my goalkeeper. Ooh, that Keylor Navas is good. Oh, let me get him. Amanda.
Saudis are going to the Qataris.
No. Well, that's a whole other angle. No. I think this is, you know, intermediary man saying, like, ooh, I have Amanda's number here. Keylor Navas is really good. Yeah. They've got two keepers. Maybe reduce their wage bill. Let me see if I can make something happen. Because Navas does not feel like a mid-season Eddie Howe signing. Not the man who signs Chris Wood.
No, come on, man. That's true.
In fact, I'm surprised he doesn't go for Nick Pope. Because if you want to continue the strategy of weakening the opposition, right?
That would be amazing.
Nick Pope, right? Probably Burnley's best player, right?
Well, yeah, when Hennessy is playing right now. So maybe even get Hennessy as your number two. You know, get them both. I don't know. Andrei Shevchenko, for sure, is not going to sign anyone anymore because he's not the general manager anymore, Gab, after less than 2 months. He won just one game. This was really inevitable. I mean, we love Sheva dearly, but 1-9 is just not good enough.
Yeah, he won one game. That was against Salernitana as well. What's odd here is, obviously, Genoa... It's funny. I was with Shevchenko in Neon in September.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was unemployed, just waiting around, just trying to learn, improve himself. They get these new owners in, these guys from Miami, and... 777 group, I think they're called. And the Genoa made three signings in January. And apparently, from what I was told, they were all scouted by Shevchenko. It was all stuff that he wanted to do. And now they just get rid of him. It seems like, you're kind of, who's in charge here? I'd love it if Ballardini came back to take over. Since
and there's Semp have also sacked the manager. So what, the two Genoa clubs right now have no one in charge? That's pretty incredible.
Well, given the Sampdoria owner is literally in prison right now, Wahbi Khazri scores twice as Tunisia beat up Mauritania 4-0. Jules, another bounce back win and another rough day for Mauritania. Disrespected in the first game. Come on, man.
With Anthem. Loads of changes made for Tunisia, and they were really good, much sharper than in the first game. I remember that ended up with the whole referee calling the game earlier and everything. Much, much better. I still don't think they've got enough to compete with the top boys, but it was very good for them. Better than from Gabon and Ghana, by the way, Gab. Their game finished 1-1, and we did not get to see Aubameyang facing his club teammate Thomas Partey. But this would be remembered for Benjamin Tete punching Aaron Mupenza after the final whistle. So they were basically, the ball went out, and they didn't give it back. So the Ghanaian players and the Gabon players basically had a huge fight.
Yeah, it was a massive brawl in the middle of it. Now, I have to say, I don't know who Benjamin Tete plays for. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume he plays in France somewhere.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I don't know.
In Belgium, I think.
But I'm sure wherever he plays, his games are on television. He knows that there's cameras and he knows there's VAR.
Yeah.
You should know that if you punch somebody in the face in the middle of a brawl...
At some point,
You're going to get caught. What was almost funny here was, you know, it's chaotic scenes, but when it's obvious that he's punched a guy in the face, and it's obvious that the referee, you know, everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
He just kind of disappears.
Wants to, like, just if you don't, if you don't see me, you're not going to...
It goes on for 10 minutes at the end. I think he went back in the dressing room I don't know where he is. And the referee's looking for him. And, like, the security comes out, and the referee's waiting and looking and stuff. Eventually, the referee just says, like, screw this. He just waves a red card in the air and sends him off. But, yeah, no, that's not how
football... 3-game ban, by the way, for him.
That 3-game match, it sounds appropriate, but yeah, the whole thing about, like, ooh, if, you know, if he doesn't see me, like, you know, punish me. Come on, man. More bad news from Marseille. Pep Gay has been suspended as the investigation into his transfer from Watford continues. Jules, update us. Give us the background here. Not everybody's...
This is a really interesting story because I think we could see more of them. Pape Gay is a very promising player in the second division in France at Le Havre. He's out of contract in June. In January, he signs a contract with Udinese, which with Watford via Udine, because he does his medical in Italy, because obviously the same owners, but signed the pre-contract with Watford. He's very happy, then changed his manager. The new manager is not keen on the contract with Watford, said to him, you can earn more money somewhere else. I've got other offers for you.
So he changes manager, you mean changes his agent.
His agent, and the new agent basically breaks that contract with Watford. And they signed for Marseille. There were other French clubs like Rennes, for example, who looked at him and said, oh, this looks very dodgy. We're not going to touch him. But Marseille went ahead. The thing is, Watford said, hang on a minute. He's got a contract with us. We're expecting him on the 1st of July last summer to report to us and to be there for pre-season training, which obviously he wasn't because he was in Marseille. Watford took the case to FIFA, and FIFA now have ruled that Marseille made a mistake and Gay made a mistake, so they've banned him for 4 months. Marseille will have to pay €2.5 million to Watford as a compensation for the transfer, I guess. And more importantly, I think for Marseille, they've been banned from recruiting players for the next two windows. So not this one currently now, but the summer coming and then the next January one. So Marseille have appealed to CAS, of course, as you would. But I don't think they've got... I think maybe the transfer ban might be lifted, or maybe just
reduced to one window.
But I think they will have to pay. By the way, Watford have also appealed and won 10 million euros, not 2.5 from Marseille, for not having get for basically stealing Gay to them. So I think it's fascinating.
Not just that, but I mean, knock on wood, Watford don't go down, because, you know, I once wrote a book about their lovable elderly Italian manager. Yeah. But if they go down and they try to make the case that the Pep Gay deal is the reason they went down, imagine the financial loss.
You can't sign a contract, even a pre-contract with a club like Watford, like Pep Gay did with Watford, and then a month later saying, actually, Marseille offering me more money. I want to stay in France. I want to go there. And just see what I mean? You don't. That's not what you do. You can't break contracts just like this.
It's a legally binding contract when you sign. We call it a pre-contract because it doesn't take effect until July 1st, but it's still a legally binding contract. Completely. I think there's a lot of stuff, as often happens here, we don't know. The old agent, you know, maybe commissions were paid or whatever. But yeah, it's an ugly story.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a Marseille fan, I think what you're going to hope for is that, and this sometimes happens, is if CAS takes the case, then CAS can freeze the
sanctions, making, I guess, get
an injunction effectively on the FIFA sanction, so that you can still have the summer window, and then maybe it gets reduced to
Gay
one window.
Yeah, can still play as well. He's not bad.
But still.
Yeah. Just as we were all back on the Unai Emery bandwagon, Gab, he lets us down again as Villarreal, after winning, taking 13 points from their previous five games, fall away to Elche, 1-0. Elche, of all people.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this guy, because everything was rolling. I know, obviously, players not there. Chukwueze is at the Cup of Nations and whatnot.
Missing, Donjuma.
But still.
I know.
Elche. And I don't think this was a great performance either from them. And, yeah, talk about loss of momentum at the right time. And, you know, he's in this weird situation. He could be doing well in Europe and, you know, and could be dispatched at the end of the season. Because if you don't have to finish mid-table with the resources they've spent on this team.
Yeah, completely.
You know.
I know.
Hatem Ben Arfa is on his way back. Jules, I'm excited. I missed him. I thought he retired.
I know, 34. I think a lot of people did think he retired, but he never announced it. You see, this is the good thing to do.
He just stopped going to work.
Yeah, now Lille, who I've let Yazici go on loan, for example, and I think need a bit of creativity. You don't take much risk. It doesn't cost you much. You have him. He's 34. That's his seventh different club, I think, or eight, something like that. I've lost a bit count. But you know what? I would love him to be amazing. And as you know, he's obviously Paris born and bred. He's my boy. But you know that at least a couple of times, or maybe three or four times, he's going to do something amazing. That might be the only thing he does, and the rest is very average. But you know you're in for at least a few moments of brilliance. So, hey, it's always good to have him back. Andrew Jennings, Gab, has passed away aged 78. If you don't know him, he did more to change football than many, playing a key role in bringing down Sepp Blatter's FIFA.
He played a key role eventually. I mean, he wrote this famous book called Foul, like 15, 20 years ago, which basically explained in great detail essentially how FIFA used to give money to countries essentially in exchange for votes.
Yeah.
And then local power brokers, the ISL bribe, which apparently was legal, business bribes legal in Switzerland. I got to meet him a bunch of times. Just typical sort of like, you know, English reporter. I don't even know he really liked football on the pitch, but he was just a dog with a bone, determined to go shouting, hang out in hotel lobbies, shouting uncomfortable questions. I don't know that without him, the FBI wouldn't have gotten involved to go and investigate what ultimately happened, you know, with Chuck Blazer and so on. So he certainly created a climate for it. He was a very, very big figure and frankly, a courageous man, because he reported this stuff and people ignored him for a long, long time. But he certainly was a trailblazer there about just holding people to account. Right, Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Thursday.
Of course
we will. We're not going to let you down like that. Till then, Love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.